One cannot walk far without treading on the past, or catching glimpses of its visible shape. The buildings, the men and women who lived in them, the ideas they held, the institutions they served, all have helped determine the course of events and created our world. Not least amongst those in Albury were William Oughtred, Samuel Horsley, Robert Malthus, and George Portal. All these men earned their place in history while serving as clerics of this parish. The listing of rectors of Albury goes back to Alan de Poynton in 1250, but there is little information on any of them until the 16th of October 1610, when William Oughtred, the now celebrated mathematician, was installed. He was born on the 5th of March 1574, during the reign of Elizabeth I. During his boyhood, Francis Drake circumnavigated the world in the Golden Hind, and the Spanish Armada was defeated. His father was a scrivener at Eton, and from him the son received instruction in writing and arithmetic, his education being continued at Eton School and King's College, Cambridge, where he obtained a fellowship. Having taken holy orders in 1603, he was appointed vicar of Shelford, Surrey, in 1605. This was his church, sadly demolished in 1788. At about the same time, he married Mrs. Christgive Carroll of Tangley. They had 9 sons and 4 daughters. John Aubrey comments, in his History of the County of Surrey, that none of his sons he could make scholars. It was a delight to find this etching of John Aubrey. William Oughtred resigned the Shelford benefice in 1610 upon being offered the rectory of Albury by Sir Edward Randall of Chilworth, who at that time was Lord of Albury Manor. The living was worth £100 per year, supplemented by tithes paid by the parishioners. A copy of the tithe agreement is on display. Money was worth roughly 50 times today's value and did not change greatly over the next 200 years. He then settled at Albury as a parish priest, devoting his time chiefly to his favourite pursuit, mathematical science. In about 1614, he invented an instrument called the Circles of Proportion, which was claimed to solve all mathematical problems. He was employed in 1628 by the Earl of Arundel, who then lived at West Horsley, to instruct his son, Lord William Hard, in mathematics. For him, Oughtred wrote the Clavis Mathematica, a textbook on the subject of algebra, published in 1631, in which he introduced the multiplication and proportion signs that we are all so familiar with, and furnished a rule for the solution of quadratic equations that has been used by all succeeding writers on the elements of algebra. Afterwards, it was approved as principal textbook in mathematics at Cambridge and described as so perfect as scarce to admit of improvement. It was in general plan adopted a few years later by Sir Isaac Newton. By 1637, Albury Manor was mortgaged to Thomas Howard, Earl of Arundel, known as the Collector Earl, celebrated for having brought from the East the Purian Chronicle, otherwise known as the Arundel Marbles, about 130 marble stones inscribed in Greek and Latin, which were afterwards presented by his grandson to the University of Oxford. Both patron and friend of William Oughtred, he was delighted to sit and talk with him in one of the many grottos in his garden at Albury Mansion. They were said to have been very nearly killed when one of the grottos collapsed. Oughtred also practised as a land surveyor. The glebe land at that time, according to his account, was 75 acres. His pupils included many future leaders of British science in the second half of the 17th century, among them Sir Christopher Wren. For amusement, he enjoyed archery. Whether his parish work suffered in any way due to his other interests, we do not know, Although when the Civil War began in 1642, we know that he held strong royalist views. In 1646, he was cited before the Committee of Ecclesiastical Affairs, where many articles had been deposed against him. Fortunately for him, a number of important people of the day, at the intercession of William Lilly, the astrologer, appeared in great numbers on his behalf, so he escaped sequestration. Charles I was executed 3 years later, on the 30th of January, 1649. William Oughtred would have known John Evelyn the diarist as a young man, and the Czech emigre, Wenceslas Hollar, the artist, both of whom, like himself, enjoyed the patronage and friendship of Thomas Howard, Earl of Arundel. Hollar did 12 etchings of Aubrey Park in about 1645. Seen here are the mansion and the park with vineyards and probably pseudo-ruins. He also did portraits of both Evelyn and Oughtred. Elias Ashmole, founder of the Ashmolean Museum at Oxford, was his neighbour and lived at the other estate called Weston, opposite the parsonage house, in his first wife's time. She died in 1641. The estate was owned by Robert Boothby in 1635. There is no record of by whom it was demolished or when, but it is shown on Lieutenant Morden's map of 1825-1828, a copy of which is on display. John Aubrey remarked to Ashmole that as he rode over Aubrey Down, he was surprised at the prodigious size of the snails thereabouts, and was told they had been brought from Italy by the old Countess of Arundel, who did dress and eat them. There are still colonies of Roman snails on Aubrey Down, but I am told their existence is under threat, because Italian restaurateurs from London gather them for culinary purposes, taking rather more than the Countess did. In appearance, Oughtred was a man of small stature, with dark, lively eyes. This is Hollar's etching of him when he was 73 years of age. John Evelyn said it extremely resembled him. We know little about his domestic life, but according to his eldest son Benjamin, he slept little and used to study late in the night, and then lie abed until 11 or 12 o'clock with his doublet on. Sometimes he would not go to bed for two or three nights, and would not come down to meals until he had solved whatever problem he was engaged upon. Also, we are told his wife was a frugal housekeeper who would not allow him to burn the candle after supper. But it may have been because she feared he would not extinguish it properly. Small practicalities had a low rating on his agenda. He died, aged 86 years, on the 13th of June, 1660, it is said from joy, upon hearing of the restoration of the monarchy. He is buried in the chancel of Aubrey Ode Church, but the site of his grave is unknown. There was no other rector of note until 1774, when Dr. Samuel Horsley was inducted. He rose very rapidly in the church, from the rector of Aubrey to the Bishop of St. David's in just 14 years. He was a rigorous defender of the doctrines of the English Church, and it earned him much esteem within the church, which undoubtedly enhanced his prospects for advancement. Son of the Reverend John Horsley, rector of St. Mary's, Newington, he was born in the reign of George II, in 1733, at St. Martin's in the Fields, where his father was clerk in orders for some years. He was educated at Westminster School and Trinity Hall, Cambridge, and took the degree of Bachelor of Law in 1758. He succeeded his father as rector of Newington, having previously been curate there. In April 1767, he was elected a Fellow of the Royal Society and was subsequently appointed secretary. He resigned the post after some dispute among members, in which he took a leading part. In about 1769, he went to Christchurch, Oxford, as private tutor to Lord Guernsey, son of the Earl of Aylesford, Lord of Aubrey Manor. Whilst at Oxford, he obtained the degree of Doctor of Law. The Earl gave him the Rectory of Aubrey, to which he was instituted in January 1774. This is an engraving of the church in 1786. In that same year, he married the daughter of his predecessor, the Reverend John Botham, and by this marriage he had a son and daughter. His wife died in 1777, and he later married for a second time. During that year, he was made domestic chaplain to Bishop Lothair upon his transfer to the See of London. In the following year, he was made a prebendary of St. Paul's. That is a cathedral benefice, usually revenue from one manor of the cathedral estates. On Good Friday, 1778, in his sermon at St. Paul's, he attacked the opinion of Dr. Joseph Priestley respecting man's free agency. This was replied to by Dr. Priestley, and there the matter rested for a time. Dr. Priestley is variously described as a man of science, a theologian, chemist, and discoverer of oxygen. He held the Unitarian belief that the Godhead is one person and not a trinity, and also advocated individual freedom of belief. At that time, the communities in England were split between church and chapel, and only members of the established church could hold public office or take a degree at Oxford or Cambridge. Eventually, his radical religious and political views caused him to leave England and join his friend Benjamin Franklin in America. He died there in 1804. Politically, he had sympathized with the Americans and later the French Revolution. And on the second anniversary of the storming of the Bastille, the loyal citizens of Birmingham burnt down his house and laboratory in 1791. Dr. Horsley resigned the living of Aubrey in 1779, and at about that time the bishop appointed him Archdeacon of St. Albans. It was whilst he was archdeacon that he distinguished himself principally as a defender of the doctrines of the English Church. In his address to the clergy at St. Albans, he entered upon a review of Dr. Priestley's recently published History of the Corruptions of Christianity. The dispute was continued for some years through the press. The Lord Chancellor Thurlow was delighted with Horsley's letters to Priestley, which he read on a visit to Lord Aylesford House at Aubrey. He declared that a man who knew so well how to defend the church ought to be supported by it, and he gave him a prebend at Gloucester. This was succeeded by the bishopric of St. David's in 1788. When he went to the diocese of St. David's, he found that very improper persons had been admitted to holy orders, men without any education and in the lowest station of life. This was not to be wondered at, when the salaries of curates were often less than £10 per year. To remedy this, he gave notice that he would not ordain anyone who had not had a grammar school education, and that salaries should be not less than £15 per year. Also, no one should serve more than two churches. He himself examined the candidates for orders. In 1794, he transferred to Rochester Cathedral, with the Deanery of Westminster annexed to it. Thereafter, he carried out his duties with his customary zeal. The members of the choir and the inferior officers of the cathedral, experiencing his attentions in the same manner as had the poor curates of Wales. His last promotion occurred in 1802 to the See of St. Asaph. Dr. Horsley's portrait by Walter Stevens at the National Portrait Gallery. The background against which his ecclesiastical career advanced so brilliantly was one of great political and social unrest. The North American War of Independence had lasted from 1775 to 1783. In France, the monarchy had been overthrown and the First Republic established, with the repercussions here in England of the protracted Napoleonic Wars. As a senior bishop, he had a seat in the House of Lords and attended all the great debates of the day, particularly those on church issues, the French Revolution, and the abolition of the slave trade. He was a determined opponent of slavery and would undoubtedly have been a valuable ally of William Wilberforce. The trade was not prohibited until 1807, the year after Bishop Horsley died. In 1804, he carried a bill through Parliament which was known as the Marriage Act, under which no marriage can be lawfully solemnised, except by special licence, in places other than a church or chapel in which banns have been published beforehand. He was considered to have a somewhat dictatorial manner and an irascible temper, yet he was warm-hearted and generous towards all those he had the ability to serve. At his table and in his hours of relaxation, he was said to be a pleasant and agreeable companion, and he was particularly fond of children. His death took place on the 4th of October, 1806, after a short illness at Brighton. He was buried at Newington with his second wife, who had predeceased him. Now we come to Thomas Robert Malthus, author of the famous essay on population, over whose name there is some confusion regarding pronunciation. It is thought to derive from Malthus, and there are numerous versions of spelling it. He was the curate of Albury circa 1798, when there is a reference to his officiating at a marriage ceremony. Born at the Rookery, Wootton, on the 13th of February 1766, he was the second son of Daniel and Henrietta Malthus. We can imagine their joy at another son after four daughters, but it was mingled with distress because the new baby had a hare lip, widely believed to be a punishment for more than ordinary sin. Daniel Malthus was sufficiently well off not to have to work and undertook his son's education himself. Then he engaged two exceptional tutors. The first, Reverend Richard Graves, reported, when Malthus was 14, that though most peaceably inclined, and who seems to give up even his just rights than to dispute with any man, yet, paradox as it may seem, loves to fight for fighting's sake and delights in bruising. Yet he and his antagonists are soon the best of friends. Underneath Malthus's amiable exterior, there was obviously a tough constitution. The second tutor, appointed when Malthus was 16, was Gilbert Wakefield, a noted dissenting minister and former fellow of Jesus College, Cambridge. Wakefield joined the Warrington Academy and took Malthus with him. The Academy was founded to educate the sons of prosperous nonconformist industrialists who were excluded from Oxford and Cambridge. Dr. Joseph Priestley, Bishop Horsley's opponent, had been on its staff. After Warrington, Wakefield secured Malthus's admission to his old college at Cambridge. Daniel Malthus followed his son's reading with the keenest interest and was constantly advising him on his reading matter until it evoked the following response. If you will leave me to proceed in my own plans for reading for the next 2 years, I speak with submission to your judgment. I promise you at the expiration of that time to be a decent natural philosopher, and not only to know a few principles, but to be able to apply those principles in a variety of useful problems. Robert grew up into a tall, strong, handsome young man, with auburn hair that lay in long locks down his neck, in a style not then fashionable, but his cleft palate and hare lip interfered with his speech. There is only one portrait of him by Linnell in the year before his death. After his graduation, the Master of Jesus College asked him what profession he proposed to pursue, to which he replied he wished to take holy orders. At first he was advised against it because of his speech impediment, but when he explained he aspired to nothing more than a country curacy, it was agreed. His family moved to Albury in the early summer of 1787, making their home at Dr. Scall's house, in that part of Albury which belonged to Shere Parish. In fact, the same house previously occupied by Elias Ashmole. Daniel Malthus wrote to Robert on the 16th of June, "You must make your way to us over bricks and tiles, and with five in a bed, and some of us under hedges. But everyone says they will make room for Robert." A Shire Parish document dated the 28th of September, 1787, shows that Daniel Malthus rented seats in Shire Parish Church, appropriate to his position. His maidservants needed more than one row, and behind these, another row of seats for his manservants. The rector of Albury at this time was the Reverend William Polehill. From the recollections of Louisa Bray, Robert Malthus's niece, we learn that the Reverend Polehill was a good specimen of the old-fashioned race of clergy, and that he and his wife were perfect pictures in their neat and pretty parsonage. These are the interior views of the church that Polehill and Malthus would have been familiar with. Sometime during 1788, Robert Malthus, Esquire, became the Reverend Robert Malthus. In 1793, the year that Louis XVI was guillotined and France declared war on England, he was made a Fellow of Jesus College. This was not simply an honour, it also provided him with a small income without obligation, for as long as he remained unmarried. At about the same time, he was appointed curate of Oakwood, a small 13th-century chapel standing on a hill surrounded by woodland, just south of Ewhurst. When Malthus left Albury for the 9-mile ride to Oakwood along narrow bridle paths, he entered a different world. Here he learned, as he wrote in 1798, that sons and daughters of peasants will not be found such rosy cherubs in real life as they are described to be in romance. The Oakwood Register in the 18th century had pages and pages of baptisms, greatly in excess of the burials. These poor cottage babies undoubtedly set the curate thinking about the principle of population. In the same year, he wrote his essay on population, which first drew attention to the struggle for existence in the human race and the problems of population outstripping subsistence. Malthus's alternative to the misery of overpopulation was marriage, prudently delayed, combined with sexual restraint. His essay was a landmark because he affirmed that population, procreation, was something which man not only could, but should attempt to control. Later, both Charles Darwin, lower picture, and Alfred Wallace, upper picture, acknowledge their indebtedness to Malthus in their theory of the origin of the species. Charles Darwin liked to visit Albury. He stayed at Haredene, now the home of Sir Michael and Lady Hutchinson. Naturally, Malthus's writings received a mixed reception, but they later earned him the post of Professor of History and Political Economy at the East India Company's College at Haileybury, Hertfordshire, founded in 1805 to educate young men for the civil administration of India. Malthus, like other economists of the day, wrote a number of pamphlets putting forward theories for the reform of the poor laws, the most harsh that they be abolished altogether. That apart, most of what he wrote, had it been couched in current jargon, would appear as relevant today as it did in the late 18th century. In November 1803, he was instituted rector of Walesbury, Lincolnshire, and held that living without residing there until his death. That living was worth just over £300 a year, from which he paid a curate 70. He married his cousin, Harriet Erkersall, in the following year, and after their wedding at Claverton, they were driven northwards to the Lincolnshire Wolds, but it would appear they never liked Walesbury or stayed there long. While at Walesbury, Malthus solemnised 2 marriages, but he made errors in the entry in the register, as he had some years earlier at a wedding in Albury, so it became rather a muddle of deletions. Obviously, he was unaccustomed to officiating at marriage ceremonies. This was possibly on account of superstitions about his deformity. It was a common belief that if you were married by a clergyman with a hare lip, then a child of that union would be similarly afflicted. On his appointment as professor of the East India Company College in 1805, he moved with his wife and small son to Halebury. Their two daughters were born there, and he resided there for the remainder of his life. Despite the fact that both his parents died in 1800, he and his family still visited Albury frequently, because his brother, Sydenham, lived at the cottage, now the home of Mrs. MacLean, and his sister, Lucy, married Samuel Mann Godshall of Weston House, which they made their Surrey headquarters until Samuel died in 1821. The house was then sold to Henry Drummond, who demolished it and built a more modest house on the site. Robert Malthus died in 1834. It appeared that he probably suffered a heart attack whilst on a Christmas visit to his father-in-law in Bath. He was buried there in the Abbey. A photo of his memorial tablet is on display, kindly loaned by Mrs. Caton. His lifespan covered a period of great upheaval, the French Revolution, the Napoleonic Wars, and the Industrial Revolution, followed by an age of reform. Albury's next cleric of note was the Reverend Canon George Portal, who was installed rector of Albury in 1858. He was a man of strong social conscience and somewhat autocratic, in fact, a stereotype of what one might imagine a Victorian of his social standing to have been. He was born on the 28th of February, 1827, at Freefolks Priors near Whitchurch, Hampshire, where the Portals had lived since 1685. It was 4 years into the reign of Queen Victoria when, at the age of 14, he went to Rugby School. There he made lasting friendships with Thomas Hughes, author of Tom Brown's School Days, and Charles Dodgson, better known as Lewis Carroll, author of Alice in Wonderland. From rugby, he went to Christ Church College, Oxford. On coming down from Oxford in 1849, he spent some time travelling as a companion of the 4th Earl of Carnarvon, father of George Herbert, discoverer, with his colleague Howard Carter, of the Tutankhamun tomb in 1922. Herbert's death occurred before the excavations were completed, giving rise to superstitious fears of the wrath of the dead king at the disturbance of his tomb. In 1850, Portal was ordained and became curate of Wilton, near Salisbury. It was when he transferred to the Church of St. Barnabas, London, that, previously having seen only the favoured and sheltered side of life, he came into contact with the poverty and human misery in the slums. The 1850s were very difficult years, with high unemployment throughout Britain, the Crimean War being a contributory cause. It was obvious to Portal that there was much domestic mismanagement among his parishioners, for when work did come their way, no provision was made for sickness or unemployment, those dire calamities of working life among the poor. Gin at 2 pence per glass was an easy consolation, and the amount of drunkenness in the parish appalled him. Surrey must have been a welcome change when in 1858, through the influence of his uncle, Henry Drummond, he was made rector of Albury. He bore a strong resemblance to his uncle, not so much in face as manner, brilliant and witty in conversation, with sparkling eyes and a friendly demeanour towards all. The population of Albury at that time was 1,041, and most of the village was in the ownership of Drummond. In general aspect, it would have appeared much as it does today. Certainly we should have recognised the larger properties, which were individually owned. Martin Tupper, author of Proverbial Philosophy, had just added the north wing to Albury House. Weston House was the property of Lady Rookwood Gage, Henry Drummond's younger daughter, for her lifetime. Clive Lodge was owned by Lord Levane, afterwards 6th Duke of Northumberland, who had married Drummond's elder daughter, Louisa, in 1845. The school and the schoolhouse are now the village hall and the adjacent private residence. The Reverend George Portal and his wife were soon comfortably settled in the rectory, an attractive house much admired by Lewis Carroll, who was to become a regular visitor. An entry in Carroll's diary for the 14th of August, 1868, states, "We walked into Aubrey, where I called at the rectory, and found Mrs. Portal at home. It is a very charming house in a very pretty garden, and mine host and hostess are very pleasant and hospitable." The following day, he wrote, "went over by the field way with Portal to Guildford." A further entry records, "walked over to Aubrey in the afternoon and called on the Portals." The extension to the rectory, seen here to the right of the picture, and now the residence of Mr. and Mrs. Skelton, was built during Portal's incumbency. For having a large family of 16 children, more space was needed. He particularly needed a quiet place to work, away from the demands of family matters and the nursery. He maintained the closest interest in social questions and the betterment of the poor. He wished to help, but believed that the only practical way of doing so was by showing them how to help themselves. To that end, he founded the Surrey Deposit Society in 1868, known 4 years later as the National Deposit Friendly Society. You see here the room in which the first meeting was held. The Duke of Northumberland was its president, and Thomas Hughes was one of the first trustees. The deposit system was a new feature, as was the admitting of women as well as men to membership. At first, this earned the society the name of the Cock and Hen Club. Members were required to contribute monthly an amount equal to that which they wished to receive daily during sickness. The simple ingenuity of the system lay in the fact that part of the contribution was put to the members' personal savings deposit account and part to the common fund for benefit. The National Deposit Friendly Society became the largest centralised society in the United Kingdom engaged in sickness insurance. There is still an office in Guildford at 44 Quarry Street. In the same year, plans for the enlargement of the parish church of St. Peter and St. Paul were made by the sixth Duke of Northumberland and his wife Louisa. This shows the church in 1867, before the work was commenced. A new chancel and vestry were built at their expense, and many other parishioners made gifts to the church. In particular, the stained glass windows, the pulpit, the organ, and the reredos. The church clock had earlier been presented by Lord Warkworth, later the seventh Duke of Northumberland, in remembrance of his coming of age on the 29th of May, 1867. The building of the chancel had been marred by an accident when 19-year-old Thomas Poulter, son of a respected local family, fell from the top of the ladder during its construction and later died from his injuries. The new chancel was consecrated in 1870 by the Bishop of Winchester, Samuel Wilberforce. He was the son of William Wilberforce, who campaigned so long and hard for the abolition of slavery, the bill for which was finally passed through Parliament in 1833, the year of his death. George Portal resigned Aubrey in 1871 for the living in Berkshire, Hampshire, no great distance from his birthplace, which was presented to him by Lord Carnarvon. A copy of his farewell sermon is on display. Lady Rookwood Gage embroidered a beautiful altar cloth and frontal as a gift for Berkshire Church. Following his transfer, he continued his involvement with the National Deposit Friendly Society as chairman of the Berkshire and Hampshire branch. He was made an honorary canon of Winchester in 1882, that is, a member of the cathedral chapter for consultation and transaction of affairs. A few years later, his health was deteriorating, and Mr. D. H. Roper, in the first 100 years, states, "The Reverend Canon George Portal was not well enough to attend the committee meeting held on the 25th of February, 1889, but he signed the minutes, and though still in poor health, he attended the committee meeting on the 25th of March. George Portal died 11 days later, on the 5th of April, 1889, and was buried in the church at Berkshire, in his favourite county of Hampshire. Mm-hmm. In conclusion, however, we must not forget that all Aubrey clerics, whether documented or not, by devoting their time and energy to their pastoral duties, have contributed to the spiritual and community life of this parish. They are all just as deserving of our recognition.